So your iPhone has just changed again. Apple held WWDC this week, and whether you're excited, you're skeptical, you're just plain overwhelmed, one thing is very clear. The way your iPhone thinks, talks, and understands you is about to be very different. And because Apple didn't just update Siri, they threw it out and started over. A brand new assistant, a brand new name, one that knows your messages, your emails, what's literally on your screen right now, and actually can hopefully hold a conversation about it. So is this the Siri we were promised years ago? Or is it another Apple announcement that just sounds better in a keynote than in real life? We've got thoughts, a lot of them. So this is the Hangout. Let's get into it. And with that, I am opening the very first official Tech Hangout that we're doing, the first one of the new generation, but past, we don't talk about it. And with me, I have a really cool panel, cool people from,
four minus me.
Okay, we're going down. Ben minus Ben. Okay, no, I got the really cool.
Chuck is here.
Chuck is here. Yes, yay. Coolest shirt on the planet.
Counts as two cool people.
True.
He does.
True. So let's start with Chuck. Chuck Joyner. Hi. We know you from other shows, right? Like the British Tech Network, for example, and In Touch With Us, as well, that one. Mac Voices, actually, mostly.
Yes, because Mac Voices is my home, and the others I have been on, and yes. And this is going to be interesting to see how this evolves. Because as you said, it was born out of the ashes of the Mac show, and it's going to be fun. It always is, especially with this group of people.
Yeah, it's always going to be fun. Yeah, and I mean, it's also going to be a broader tech focus, which I think is quite up your alley with everything you're doing with Mac Voices. And let's go just around my window here. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm so excited to be here with this new venture we're having here. We let the Mac show go to the history. Mm-hmm. What a great 18 years of Mac of the British Tech Network, and our thanks to Ewan, of course, for all that. And we did all those goodbyes last week, but there's a fresh new start here.
Yay.
So much new technology. I'm excited to contribute and have some fun here with all our friends.
Yeah, and you're right. Dave is just twice on the screen, so I'll fix that. In the meantime,
it's not me for once.
now we have Marty twice. Who is missing? Someone is missing. Chuck is there. 1, 2, 3. Someone is missing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Now Marty's there twice.
Now Marty's there. Oh, it's twice. Ben is missing.
Yeah,
Ben, I blame you.
It's always Ben's fault. Yeah. Speaking of Marty, you're Mr. Apple everything. Like, you have, I think, about 15 million different Apple podcasts. Basically, for every device, there's at least 5, right?
And if they come out with any devices. New devices, I'm going to be in trouble. Yes. When glasses come out, I don't know what I'm going to do. Thank God they didn't a car.
I know what you're going to do. You're going to do 2 shows at once.
Yeah. Welcome to the HomePod Central with Marty Gentius.
Yeah. No, he's just literally going to be like 2 cameras, and he does like 2 shows.
Oh, it's going to be the breakfast show, the lunch show, the dinner show, the brushing my teeth before bed show. Yeah. And just
the snack show.
The snack show. Yeah, but I'm happy to have you
here. It's nice to know that I'm amongst friends.
Yeah, we just gave Marty a lot of great ideas right there.
Yes,
He might be running with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to your rebranding as Marty News Network, MNN, all the time.
That would be fun. Not a news network.
I don't do Apple. All Apple.
Mostly. The person who's not doing all Apple and has been, for example, also on the big show on the British Tech Network and on the original version of the Tech Hangout and so many other things. Ben, welcome back. It's been a while.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
Yeah. Well, it's glad to be here and be part of this new era.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to your tech stories. I know you like a lot of like gaming, for example. I get yeah. some fun stuff from you. So
it's yeah. gotta be and fun. Chuck, you said evolve. Oh, this is gonna devolve.
I was being and, optimistic, man.
Yeah, exactly. We should be optimistic, at least in the beginning. Like everything else will follow. And the person who's been hosting, I don't know how many shows that I've been on over the last many, many, many years, and my podcasting compadre on Retro Rewatch, we have Jeff Gamet with us.
Patrice, I'm so excited that we're all here, and we are doing the first episode. This is cool. I cannot wait to see how this goes. And that could go two ways. It could be exciting because everything is so cool, or it could be exciting because it's like when you slow down on the highway to look at the wreck off the side of the road.
Yeah. But
either way, yeah. we the will ladder. Be entertained.
Little we will be entertained.
Little column A, little column B.
Little bit of everything. So, and speaking of little bit of everything, let's jump into our very first segment, which we dubbed The Feeds. Everybody brings a story, and then we'll have a couple minutes to talk about it. I'm just going to randomize the order here because, like, it's just how it was put in the document. So let's just start with Chuck. You have a really cool Rogue Planet Windows Defender 0-day that you're bringing us today.
Yeah, I brought this because this is an example of the fight that's going on with Microsoft. I can't decide if Microsoft is trying to pick a fight with developers or not.
Yes.
But basically, this one gentleman, if my understanding of the situation is correct, this one researcher pointed out to Microsoft a bug, and instead of welcoming it and saying thank you, they sort of initiated some legal action against him and curtailed his access to this. So, this week, I guess, we had this huge Patch Tuesday thing come out because of all the bugs, over 200 that had been found in Microsoft. So that was patched. And right after that, the very same security researcher revealed a new 0-day. And so, you know, that's kind of pointed, I think. And frankly, I don't blame him. And it's no secret that I'm not a fan of Microsoft. But I just feel like, you know, what are you doing? Yeah. You know, because the very people that are helping you make your product better,
yeah,
which is not an easy thing to do, but they're trying, and you're alienating them to the point now that they're kind of pulling your pants down. And
yeah.
So I think this is going to be I don't know if it's a bellwether situation or just one of those mistakes that some idiot made, but boy, this is one that just doesn't feel good.
Yeah. I mean, I think they might have lost some of their fans like to this because that created a lot of backlash in the security community. I mean, he got the they sent the digital crimes unit on the researcher. They revoked access to the Microsoft Security Response Center. They I think shut down his GitHub and GitLab repositories. Mm-hmm. They were basically pulling all the stops. And I think the only reason why that stopped eventually was that there was a massive backlash and public outcry and them saying, like, what the hell are you doing?
Now, is this the same security researcher that had been telling Microsoft, hey, you have this major security flaw for quite a while? And
yes.
then eventually was like, look, I've got to disclose it. And he did. So, okay. Just making sure it's the same person. Yeah.
Pretty
okay.
Much.
And so then that's when Microsoft retaliated.
Mm-hmm.
And and so now his retaliation is, you know what? Screw you.
Yeah.
And and they also refused to pay him the bounty.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I forgot that.
That was the other
part. That.
Yeah. The bounty that he was owed. I think they've reversed that decision as well now, but as I said, it just took public humiliation for that to happen.
This is essentially the tech equivalent to hiring a bounty hunter, and then when he brings in the bounty, shooting him so you don't have to pay.
Yeah. Well, not as if that hasn't happened before.
Yeah.
Since we're in the non-Apple segment, sorry, Dave, interrupted you.
Oh no, it's okay. I mean, Microsoft has no love lost. I mean, all kidding aside, with Chuck's his feelings on it. I mean, I have to deal with it every day. You have to deal with it every day, Patrice, in your work. It's sad to see where these things are going. I mean, I'll just add a caveat to the ad of what they're doing on the security side point. They were not upgrading Edge for like a month at a time, which was crazy. Mm-hmm. They just now changed that to 2 weeks coming up in August. So, you know, I see that in the enterprise as good because we have to force the updates on these all the time. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's just constant change with this kind of stuff that should have been done years ago. So, I mean, it's something that I think Microsoft's going to continue to lose their fans. Honestly, if they even have fans, as Chuck said in our private chat, it's unfortunate we have to deal with it, but it, you know, there's billions of people out there, millions, not millions, using a Microsoft product, unfortunately. So that's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. To be perfectly honest, the server side is running Microsoft now, and I have to wonder if Windows is even a priority.
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
Windows is not a priority anymore. Microsoft has already made it clear that they're moving on, and they Azure, have a
ADO.
So Windows is going to become more and more of an afterthought for Microsoft over the coming years.
You know what?
So does that mean that developers are going to become developers for Windows for Microsoft are going to become more of an afterthought?
They were already an afterthought.
We're afterthought. Yeah. I mean, they're moving everything to the cloud. You're going to have an OS in the cloud. Probably won't happen with Windows.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But again, you know, developers. I mean, look, I'm not super well versed in the Windows side, but there are a lot of applications out there. And so is this telegraphing a message to them that, you know, we're fine. Our AIs will be able to do anything that our customers want. And so we really don't need you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you hit it right in the head there. You hit that right on the head there with AI. I mean, that's their other life right now. Copilot. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're living in that. I'm living in it. I'm dealing with it aggressively. We're expansion is constant. You know, you have to stay up on this stuff to know it. And if Microsoft's going to focus on it, why aren't we focusing on it? I mean, you're in their world, so you've got to be in their world. So
yeah, exactly.
So this particular article could be a harbinger of what's going to happen in the future in terms of Microsoft. It could be that it is both incompetence that created this problem and intentionality that created this problem. Because if they scare off all the developers or they make it difficult, they can kind of say, we've got everything you need. It's in the cloud, all products and services under one roof.
Yeah.
And then they control the speed at which things are expected out of their services. So
let's move on to the next article. And since we're in the non-Apple segment, let's stay there with Jeff's piece, because we're going from the cloud and the AI software world into the physical AI world with your article.
All right. So my piece, this comes from TechCrunch, and it's talking about how Prometheus, which is an AI company that Jeff Bezos
physical AI,
and they've raised another $12 billion to work on what they're calling an artificial general engineer. So imagine designing bridges or
machines.
machines or drugs or whatever.
Machines building robots.
Yes, machines building robots. What could possibly go wrong?
Yes.
So, you know, so Prometheus, this is not a new thing. Excuse me. We've known about this for a little while. Mm-hmm. They'd already raised some money. And so what stands out for me in this article is actually a few paragraphs down where they talk about how Jeff Bezos is saying that that the rise of AI is going to create what he's calling a labor scarcity. Because of all the productivity gains that we're going to get, there's going to be so many jobs for people that there just won't be enough humans to go around to fill all the jobs, and, which is completely in contrast to what
everybody else is saying.
Everybody else is saying.
Yeah.
And I can appreciate why he would say this, because you know, he wants to put a good spin on his product, and I believe he's wrong. However, yeah. if he is correct, in this part, what that actually means is it's physical labor jobs where the AI systems need humans to build the things that they design.
Yeah.
Yeah, where else have we seen this?
Right.
A lot of sci-fi movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can become batteries.
Huh. There's an
idea. If only. Yeah, there's a quote from him in here that I'll read. Significant productivity in the economy is going to raise the standard of living. People who today have two earner households, they'll become one earner households. And, that could be good or bad. Maybe some people who are working overtime will stop working overtime. And, so he's trying to spin that we're suddenly going to be rolling in cash.
Yeah. But the reality is we're just not going to have enough work to do. So, like,
yeah, and you'll be a two... You go from a two-income household to a one-income household because one of the people got laid off and can't get a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's inevitable that we will have also AI getting involved in the physical world, right? Because that's just...
For sure.
Like, I mean, automation, like production and whatever has been like largely automated already. And that's just going to continue, and AI is going to play a role. Like, so I think his investment makes sense. It's just the arguments that he's bringing to say, oh, yeah, this is all a good thing, and don't worry about it. Yeah, I don't believe it.
Same.
The thing is, the LLM models have to be way better than they are now. Mm-hmm. Because if Engineer Gemini hallucinates on a bridge, that's going to be a pretty damn expensive mistake.
Well, that's one way to slim down your workforce, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
But this feels like just one more example of all of us, and that includes us, rushing and to this ultimate conclusion that this is going to revolutionize things, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, a lot of times we tend to the negative revolutionized part. Mm-hmm. There's no question that AI has speeded up things. There's no question it's affecting things now. But I also am not quite sure that with all respect to Mr. Bezos, I don't know if this is going to happen quite that fast. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you have to account for job changes, not just job losses. And that seems to be something that very few of the doomsdayers are doing.
Yeah.
That just, oh my God, you know, mm-hmm. 5,000 jobs, 10,000 jobs at any given company are going to disappear at any moment now. And it's like, okay, maybe, a third of that will, but there's going to be a lot of just evolution to new things. And frankly, to these companies having the ability to do things that they've wanted and we've wanted for a long time and just haven't been able, they just haven't been able to do it because maybe it's not profitable enough. Maybe it doesn't appeal to enough people. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could see a rise of niche products as opposed to, you know, this horrible thing that that so many of us think may happen.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, a digital CNC.
You know, these articles are so dystopian in the way they're presented because we're more interested in dystopian futures instead of futures that are more utopian. I think we're going to lose jobs. Every time we've had a change in technology or an advancement in technology in society, we've lost jobs.
Yeah. And then we build jobs on somewhere else.
Yeah. 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 We don't have blacksmiths or whale oil salesmen anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have very few like farmers, like manual farmers anymore. Like it's all like machines these days.
Yeah. So I'm sorry for the whale oil salesmen that are still out of work and are looking for jobs.
Yeah.
But that's a retool. As Chuck had mentioned, that society always manages to rebound. So if there is a dystopian future, the best part of it is I will most likely not be around to see.
Marty, one thing you will be around to see, though, is let's go from a dystopian future to an like utopian future, at least when it comes to what Apple is telling us. I think, Ben, your story is the best starting point for that.
Well, duh, it's mine. So, there has been something we have been waiting for well over a decade now. And that is for Siri to not suck. They promised this in 2024. Well, it turns out Gianandrea was selling, what's a nice way to say snake oil?
Whale oil?
Snake oil.
Yes. But anyway, this year with Rockwell in charge of the Siri team, Apple has looked to finally make good on its promises, and they have introduced Siri AI. As someone who now has access to this through the iOS 27 beta, I have to say it is much improved. Where before it just randomly did stuff. Now it's just like, oh, I didn't know if I hear you right. Should I do this or this?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the other thing that really interests me here is how they're doing it. Everybody assumed this would be a white label version of Gemini.
Yeah.
And it's not that at all.
Which is
good. They take Google's frontier models, and essentially they do a completely customized Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes from basically the same data that builds Gemini, but is a completely different fork.
Yeah. I mean, they called it like a new Apple Foundation model, basically. So it's a blend of their own models and their own systems and their own training and the Gemini models, the Google models.
Yep. And the other interesting, the cloud servers they're using to get this, and I will be straight out front, I'm getting most of my information from actually listening to Upgrade. Thank you, Jason Snell and Mike Hurley. The servers are set up so essentially Apple controls them. They are set up so if anyone but Apple is the last person to touch that server, they cannot deal with your data.
Yeah, I mean, a very Apple approach to like privacy and to like making sure data is secure, right? Doesn't mean that Apple is not hosting stuff on Google servers, right? They have some things that are running Google data centers, but still with Apple's private cloud compute and so on system. So it's basically just Apple rented server space on Google's side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, we have a couple of articles about that. What I found interesting is Dave's take on that, because I saw that you put something in about investors misreading the announcement.
Yeah. I just thought that was fascinating to see where investors all of a sudden seem to think that because of this announcement that Apple is doomed. And then, of course, the stock keeps going up and down like a yo-yo. It looks like it's down again today. But, you know, that's the behavior of the stock market. You have you have people who are just scared as investors. I mean, I've stood my ground and stuck it with it for years, so I've been doing okay. So it's just unbelievable how that affects any company stock, whatever announcement of such sorts has this. But it just blows my mind. Really, it does.
Yeah, I mean, that's also doomed. Yeah. You see that pattern basically every time, like every quarterly earnings call, every big Apple event. Like the stock always dips after, and it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, other than people just, I don't know, are crazy.
What? And then it goes way up.
Yeah, sorry, Ben.
Yeah, then it goes way up in 3 months when Apple says they made all the money.
Yeah, well, right before the earnings call, it goes up again.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get off on a rant here, but okay. The whole rumors things, is it any surprise? I mean, nobody could live up to the rumors that, you know, that the rumor mongers create these expectations that, you know, and I swear, I think that if Apple announced that they had just created the transporter, the stock would have gone down. You know, somebody would have found something wrong with it. It's
too many molecules.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. So
it's not purple enough.
Yeah, I mean, to Dave's point, you know, the market is driven so much by perception.
Yes.
And, you know, the perception is driven by, you know, people that right now it feels like it's being driven by people that generate clickbait articles. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Extremely exactly. Distressing.
Yeah.
I'll
go, Dave.
I said, I'll also add clock the services is becoming a huge part of Apple's business. I mean, this is part of services. I mean, iCloud is a big piece of their business. They get plenty of my money every month for my iCloud storage. So, and in fact, added two more terabytes on it as well. So, but I think that's the way with a lot of companies that are in this business. I mean, the services end of it is just it's pure profit. It's just a service you're offering. It's not a physical item. And why not? I mean, that's the way to go with these types of services these days. And this is all part of it. So why is the investors reacting to this? Like I said, you can never. That's why you can never guess what the stock market's going to do. You're at risk every time you put something in there. Luckily, my portfolio is looking good. I'm not complaining. Mm-hmm. But you know, it is what it is. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the stock market is less about facts. I mean, people think so. Right. Less about facts and numbers and whatever, and more about emotions and people's perception of things. Like, it's really about people at the end. So, makes it more interesting.
Yeah, and thank God we have the rumor mongers out there to affect people's emotions and affecting
the
stock market. To bring temperament to the whole process. Yes. You know, so looking at these criticisms that people are having, I mean, that's exactly what, at risk of sounding like I'm self-promoting here, that's exactly why I ended up writing the blog post that I wrote about what Apple's doing with AI. And because what's coming out in this piece, it's absolutely true. People are completely misunderstanding and misreading what Apple's doing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, I mean, I said it in, I think on Dave's show, I'll believe the whole Siri AI actually works when it's done. It
right.
So far it looks not bad, to be honest. There's some bugs, of course, which is normal at this early stage. But it actually seems to be useful and helpful. But Apple will get it right, right? We know that. They have really good people. They are willing to spend the money. I think eventually they will get it right. It's just a matter of
Do we know when. That, though?
I think we do.
Would you have said that two years ago? Yeah, I was going to say, would you have said that 2 years ago? All we know, all those wonderful little demonstrations they had could have been just deep fakes.
okay. Fair point. I mean,
and here's the thing with that. They looked at everything they had done with the 2024 version of Apple Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike
and then threw it away.
Yeah, Mike went like, no, we're starting over. We're doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a scenario where Apple has to earn my trust.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
This is mobile me.
They've lost it. Trust. They lost it. Yes, they have to earn it back. Yeah, but I think the approach is the right one, right? Apple is saying, Apple is not saying, oh, we're better than everybody else at creating models. They're saying, no, there is good models out there. Let's use them. But yet, let's use them in a way that is still very, very Apple and in a way that is useful for people. Right? Not a technical service, not a, oh, we have AI for AI's sake, like Microsoft is doing. Okay, what can we actually do with it? What do people need, right? And let's do that. So I think that makes sense. I have to say, I mean, I've played with some, like I got access on Wednesday, I want to say, to the beta version of it. I've played a little bit with the object recognition, and except for an Austrian dish that, to be fair, was hard to recognize. It actually got it really like right. It was able to recognize all the objects I pointed at, and was just walking through the street, going like, "Oh, this, that picture here. Look, what is that? And can it recognize it? Can I ask it questions about it?" And it said it did that well. And also the questions I answered, it really handled whatever I threw at it. So that is useful. I think people will use that. I've not used the picture thing yet, so that's the next thing I want to try. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing how that works out for you.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that in a smartass way.
Yeah.
Like I'm actually really interested.
Yeah. Someone in our In Space group, he took a picture with like his hand in front of his face and then told the S-bot. I think what you named it, Jeff.
The S-bot
to basically remove the hand. It did actually pretty good job. The face was not 1,000% exactly, but it was very, very close so that you could recognize that person. So
Consider you had to be Disney not too long ago to do that. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly. The only question I asked then is, okay, but all those wrinkles on the face, are they now real or are they AI generated? Well, that was my question.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. Yes.
Maybe the question is more the lack of wrinkles.
Yeah, is that would that also
AI
be
generated. Or
that
not?
Might. That actually probably is AI generated. Yeah. I want to throw in briefly for like a minute or two, my article. I actually wanted to skip it, but I think it fits in really well because there's one thing that Apple ever Apple added AI capabilities, which is passwords. So it can now automatically fix passwords or passwords with that are vulnerable, maybe have been cracked or just low complexity. Can automatically, using an agentic AI, go in, log into the website, and change it. And I'm like, what could possibly go wrong?
Oh my God. Right. Oh my God. Yeah. So, Dave, when you and Patrice and I were doing live coverage of the keynote and this came up, I bit my tongue because we wouldn't have been able to cover the rest of the announcements, because I would have taken us off on such a deep rabbit hole rant about how bad this idea is.
Yeah, I have seen some people do it, and it seems to actually work really, really well. So I think Apple knew that this was a very, very risky thing, so they took care of it. But I think it's a good idea, because a lot of people would otherwise never do it.
On one hand, yes. But on the other hand, AI systems are designed to create predictability.
Yeah.
And even if you've created what appears to be a random password with an AI system, give the other AI systems enough of those passwords, and they'll figure out what the patterns are.
No, but I think there's a misunderstanding. The AI is not generating the password. The passwords app already has a password generator that is more random. That is, I would say, reasonably random. I mean, it's still pseudo-random, but it's reasonably random. The AI is the tool that goes to the website, finds the login screen, finds the password change dialog, and does all of that part. So it takes the password from the passwords app, logs in, changes, that goes to the place where to change the password, changes the password, and stores it in the passwords app, where it's already stored, because it gets the new password also from the passwords app and says, okay, please use this password now. So I think that part, okay, I think, is fine. It's just like, if anything goes wrong along the way, then might be a problem. Like, I don't know, it wants to paste it in, and then some error happens, or the AI goes down or whatever, and now, like, is it the old password? Is it a new password? Like,
yeah.
Now it's broken.
Okay, this isn't as bad as I thought it was. I completely misunderstood how this was working.
Yeah, it's a feature of the passwords app, not just an AI. If you did this with another AI, I think that might be a risk. But this is basically just a feature of the passwords app that in the background uses then AI to navigate.
Okay, that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, I saw someone did it I saw someone do it with 60 different passwords. So it worked. So, good job. I'm still not sure I would do it, but hey, better than nothing.
Well, now with the explanation you've given me, all those people we know that use one single password, not the app one password, a single password for everything.
Yeah, or set a password 30 years ago and I've never changed it since.
Yeah, this could be really handy because now they don't have to figure out how to change passwords in all these places. Yeah. And they're the kind of people that probably, either through lack of knowledge or incentive, would do it otherwise.
Yeah, it's usually both.
I think there's a control issue there, because and what I mean by you are suspending control over to passwords to be able to generate and randomly generate and pull it up when the next time you log in, or on another device when you log in. So there's a kind of whole trust thing that goes on there that is, I think, the barrier for most people from making this kind of leap. I haven't made this kind of leap. And I know that I constantly get warned about passwords that I've used or that are too long and have not been changed. And it's sort of, but I still like the idea of the stuff walking around in my head. So I saw this and I'm tempted to kind of just take the leap and see what happens.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Speaking of taking the leap, Marty, I want to get to your story, because that's, for me, it was a lot of fun when I started using that. The Vision Pro, the beta version of the Vision Pro, Vision OS 27, has a new really cool feature. So yet another reason Chuck should buy a Vision Pro, by the way.
The feature is, if you've taken panoramic pictures before, I have taken a few in places that I thought this would be really nice to have in the panorama, but I have no way of looking at them other than stretching them out like hot dogs on my screen.
Yeah.
And what this does is it takes those panoramic pictures and you can make the – I tried it over the last couple of days, and it's like, this is my new fun toy. Mm-hmm. Because I have all these old panoramic pictures.
Yeah, you can use when old ones. Not a problem.
Yeah. When I took, I took one on my trips to Ireland. I took one when I was in the Temple of 10,000 Buddhas and did a panorama. And it happens so quick, seamlessly, that it gives you the option. You add the panorama and pop. It's now your environment.
Yeah.
And it adds a great deal of dimensionality to it. It's not this flattened, stretched out
picture,
perspective, destroyed kind of picture. I don't know if this is going to drive Vision Pro sales, but it probably definitely not. Is something. It is something that's an added value to the headset that can't be an added value on any other platform.
It allows you to create your own environments, and you can do whatever you want there. I mean, take a panorama of anything. I mean, I took some panoramas on a trade fair in April this year, and I put them up, and I was literally, wow, I'm on the shore floor. I can to the left, to the right. The only thing I can tell you, panoramas with people when they're moving, not a good idea, because they look distorted oftentimes to people because they're moving around, right? But but it's like panoramas I've taken like 10 years 15 years, maybe almost, ago, and you would think, oh, like back then the cameras were so bad and you couldn't do that. No, they're perfectly fine. You can literally take a 15-year-old panorama with a camera that was crappy by today's standard. And you couldn't tell. Like, Apple does a really good job cleaning it up, making it it's not a full, like, immersive, like, the top and the bottom are still your room, but everything else, like, around you stretches in a way and is, like, done in a way that you really feel you're in the environment, and it's really cool.
Yeah really I did some rooftop shots, panorama rooftop shots from Istanbul.
Yeah.
And put them in there, and it's wow.
Yeah, you can literally be sitting on the rooftop in Istanbul doing your work, stuff like that. And I think, as I said, we had a lot of fun on InSpace, like doing them. You can't share them right now, but you can, of course, share the panoramic picture, and then someone else can also generate them.
Mm-hmm. All right, I have some panos that I want to share.
Sure, share them.
To get your opinion on
That will be really cool, yeah. There's some limits for now. I think the Apple will solve that. You cannot use them in FaceTime calls, which makes sense because the environment is actually not sent in the FaceTime call. Like, it's just you're sitting in a call and everybody opens up or puts up their version of the environment, basically. But if you have now one that was generated, nobody else has that. So that doesn't work. Not yet, at least. As I said, I'm sure Apple will do that eventually. Yeah, but it's really cool, I have to say.
I'm just a little afraid of what Jeff's panos are of.
All right. Okay. So what I'll do, I'll make a shared folder somewhere and give all of you access to a bunch of panos.
Ah, please do.
Chuck, now you have to go buy Vision Pro so you can check them out. But even without the Vision Pro, you can be either delighted or appalled at what you see in that folder.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to a new segment. So the segment is called The Hang Jury, because not The Hung Jury, it's The Hang Jury, because this is a hangout.
I get it now. Oh my God, once again, I'm an idiot.
But none of us are hung?
I don't know.
Are going to the gallows, right?
No. It's more... I picked a controversial topic and one that will hopefully get strong opinions, and we're going to have a couple minutes to talk about it. And I think the big thing this week was with WWDC was Liquid Glass. So the topic is Apple's Liquid Glass, capitulation or maturity. So last year, Apple introduced that, debuted that. Was a sweeping, translucent UI design. They called it delightful and elegant. And when it actually shipped, and I think we all know that, it wasn't that good. There was a lot of backlash, very intense backlash sometimes, like Reddit, especially Apple support communities, podcasts, blogs, everybody was basically bagging on it. And this Monday, Apple actually acknowledged that feedback and said it deeply appreciated it and announced a slate of changes coming to iOS or in iOS 27 and in macOS Big Bridge or Golden Gate, actually. So the hang jury question for us today is this Apple at its best, listening, iterating, maturing a bold vision, or is it an admission that they shipped a broken design and forced it on a billion users for a year? Discuss.
Why not both?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not mutually exclusive.
No, it doesn't have to be. But why? I mean, why do you think it's both?
All right, they shipped a broken design, forced it on billions of users.
Yeah, which is bad.
Which is bad, and then they iterated and improved on the vision that they had for the broken interface that they dropped on us.
Yeah.
So it started with broken design, then went on to, we didn't do this as well as we should have. So let's put a good spin on us fixing our screw up.
Yeah.
But did
they actually fix it?
Well,
I think it's a lot better.
It is better, but it's also like, I don't think they really fixed it. They never fixed their initial decision. They just said, oh, here's a slider. If you don't like it, change it.
All right, good point. you have now convinced me it's not truly fixed.
Yeah.
But they have made an improvement.
Yes.
To a design that needed a lot more refinement before it shipped last year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I've got to say,
there is in this whole argument, there's a lack of tolerance of, you know, when will it actually be right? Well, when I say it's right, that's when it's right. You know, you're not the only, I am not the only voice in here. Mm-hmm. So Apple is always going to get this type of criticism,
sure,
and they'll adjust from the criticism. So I don't think it's incompetence on Apple's part. I think it's they're putting stuff out there. They're making adjustments. And you know what? There are going to be people who say it's still not right.
No, that's true.
They've gotten it correct.
Because it's different.
And, you know, and when they finally are satisfied or they've run out of air, they will move on to the next thing that they can complain about that's part of Apple's design or Apple's software.
Yeah. No, that is absolutely true. I mean, it's like there's some people where the fact that it's changing is already like the biggest problem, and that will never go away. And if they ever get used to it, then there's a new thing that they don't like and it's just going to continue. That's true. But I still think I'm like, there were a lot of very glaring problems last year, like the corner radius is a macOS, for example. macOS had a very horrible implementation of Liquid Glass. Actually, on the phone, it was better than on macOS. Mm-hmm. They fixed that. So it's not just the slider. The Mac maybe wasn't an afterthought, but it didn't get as much attention as the other platforms did.
Yeah, Marty, I think you're partly right with what you just said. I mean, haters are going to hate, and mm-hmm. the people that don't like change are always going to complain. And people that want it to be just their way will never be satisfied. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Where Apple totally stumbled and I think showed at least a modicum of incompetence is with the way they implemented Liquid Glass. No, let me come into that sentence from a different angle. Apple implemented Liquid Glass in such a way that it created visibility problems for a significant number of users.
Yeah.
There were issues with contrast. There were issues with just overall readability. It was suddenly difficult for people to see where buttons were, mm-hmm. or what was on a button, and if you have a significant vision impairment, it became a problem just to use the core interface.
Yeah,
and that was something that never should have made it out of the Apple Labs in that state. Someone along the way should have said, "Hey, we need to look at accessibility with this," and immediately there should have been people that said, oh, we have a big problem here. Mm-hmm. We need to make some changes before this can actually ship. This is not a truly usable interface, even though for a significant number of people, yeah, they can use it. It's still not a truly usable interface. We're getting closer this year, but I think that there's still a lot of improvement that needs to happen.
Yeah, but I mean, that's also normal, right?
Yeah.
I think it's telling that Apple just let Alan Dye walk for Meta.
It's true.
Yeah, and then we're immediately seeing interface changes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, as someone who is not affected by the liquid glass controversy, I mean, okay, yeah, some things changed. I didn't find it this horrible, super distracting thing. Maybe I'm not detail-oriented enough to look at some of the other issues there. The accessibility thing, there was definitely a drop ball, no question about it. But so many of the complaints that I was reading back then, and even now in places, are coming from people that really don't have accessibility issues. Mm. It's just like they just feel like they don't like change.
Yeah. And so, you know, everybody was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can go the whole way back to, you know, when we went from System 9 over to System 10, or
wait, as we now know. You mean the lickable design?
Yeah, the lickable design. This is how am I ever going to get worked on this? And, you know, so people just, you know, they don't like change. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. I think, Patrice, your breakdown of it is perfect. I know the two aren't mutually exclusive, but I feel like it was a lot more the first one that, you know, they shipped something, they got feedback, they listened, they've adapted, mm-hmm. you know, and they're going to get more feedback, and there may yeah. be more adaptations to make now.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The iOS 7 design language took a couple iterations to fully get right as well.
Yep. I think every design language so far we've had, none of them were perfect day one.
Yeah, same with Aqua, same with Platinum, same with skeuomorphism. You nothing's ever going to be perfect. You ship it out the best that you can, and then you find out how it works in the real world and you adjust.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm waiting for the complaints. Yeah. I'm waiting for the complaints to start rolling in about the parental safety stuff. I think that'll be the next big target.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. So true.
My preteen nephew is already complaining.
Of course he is. You know what shipping next on this podcast is the drop.
The drop?
The drop, yes. So we have, of course, a bunch of cool things that we have been using, that we are enjoying right now, and that we're going to drop for you. And I'm going to start, actually, in order I have here, and start with Jeff today. So Jeff, you brought a non-Apple thing, which is awesome.
I did. And it's Trello. I'll just cut to the chase. It's Trello. And I brought this because even though it's something that I've talked about multiple times on other shows, this is such a fracking useful tool for me. For those of you that don't know what it is, it's essentially like a digital Kanban. Where you just make columns, you have cards that you put in each column, and it lets you organize whatever it is you want, however you want. And I use it extensively for project management. And and I've set up Trello boards for like my blog, jeffgamut.com, that one. So I'm keeping track of all the things I want to write about, where they are in the process. And I have another one for clients. So I'm working on client projects. I know where in the process that project is, and you know, like all the way from we have a concept on down to the invoice has been paid, the whole process start to finish. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of automation things you can do. You can tie it into other platforms, and it's you can use it for free, but there's so much more you can do with it if you're on one of the paid platform or paid tiers. And so, yes, I'm paying for Trello, and holy crap, it's one of those things that I use every single day.
Yeah, if you are freelance, Trello is a must.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I have talked to many freelancers over the years, uh-huh. like me, I'm freelancing right now, who needed a system. And so I told them about Trello.
Yeah.
And all those people are still using Trello.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the customizability is... Mm-hmm. is really, I think, one of the big advantages, right? I mean, whatever process you need or want, and it might even be different for different projects, you can put that in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use the web interface, mm-hmm. but they also have iPhone, iPad, Mac, Windows, Android apps. So you can run it in an actual app, mm-hmm. and your data is synced across all your devices. So I look at the same Trello board on my iPhone as I do on my Mac. Yeah. And I can update or create new projects anywhere I am.
Very cool. Dave, your cool thing is something I bet you're using a lot for your podcasts.
I am now. It's Logic Pro. I've been using GarageBand for many years, mm-hmm. and I just finally decided, you know, I've already paying for the Creative Studio. Why not jump into
Might
it?
Might as well use it. Yeah.
Lot to learn, lot to understand. It does have similar interfaces to what GarageBand had, but just wanted to just really try it out. And it's more affordable now than I'm open to pay for the Creative Studio, because I just couldn't justify spending, flat $300 on it right off the bat when I wasn't really ready yet. I'm using Final Cut for video. Mm-hmm. What the heck? I thought I'd give it a shot. I think it's a really good tool. It's got a bit of a learning curve, so it's going to take a bit of time. I'm hoping to find some more training sessions that are out there to learn a lot more about it. Same thing with Final Cut. I could be better with that too. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's a good pick.
Yeah, it's definitely a good tool. I mean, it's yeah. probably overkill for a lot of people, but once you grow to that level and you mm-hmm. you need something like that, and I think it's one of the best tools. I know a lot of musicians are still using it as well for their music productions, and podcasters. I know a bunch that know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a studio level DAW. Yeah. This and Apple Creator Studio has made this essentially accessible to everyone at an affordable price. Doubly so if you're a student.
Yeah, true. Student or somewhere in education like Marty.
Yep. It's time for everybody to take the leap up from GarageBand.
Yeah, absolutely. Chuck, you have a cool thing, a drop with a twist. A drop twist?
Yes. This
I wouldn't see that maneuver.
Later, Jeff. Okay. You have to look at my OnlyFans.
Marty, can I borrow your credit card?
There's probably not a lot of you that don't know about Stream Deck, but if you are one of those few, then you really need to get on the bandwagon. Don't bother, because you'll go through the process that I went through and a lot of others have gone through, where you buy the little one to try it out. Then you think, oh, I can do more. You buy the big one. Then you buy the next one. Just go for the big one. But the reason I brought this up is that with every Stream Deck, you now get access to the virtual Stream Deck software.
Yeah.
And the requirement basically is that once a month, that you have to plug in your real Stream Deck to your Mac. But if you're traveling, mm-hmm. that I guess if you really have an extended vacation, it could be an issue. I just did some traveling this week, and for the first time, it's like, okay, I need to do some stuff, and I really need my Stream Deck, but I don't want to carry my Stream Deck. So I set the virtual Stream Deck up, and it is perfect. I mean, it just acts like the real thing. If I have a little complaint about it, it's just a little bit difficult to toggle it on and off. So I just tended to leave it sitting in the corner of my screen, but all my Stream Deck buttons are there. Even multiple panels are there. And so if you have been thinking about this and you have a laptop or you have a desire to travel with all your Stream Deck capabilities, this, you know, now it's there and it's at no extra cost. You just have to go to the website and download it. But once you get it set up, And I have to tell you, it's making me rethink the way that I use my Stream Deck, both the physical device and the mobile device, now that I know I'll be able to take things with me. So go for it.
Very cool. I'm going to download that.
And this is the way video production and control has been going. It's just you start with something big, then that same functionality keeps getting smaller, to the point where you can take it anywhere.
Yeah. I think it's been interesting. It's interesting the way they've implemented the model that, yes, you do have to buy the physical one as opposed to just making a software Stream Deck, because, you know, then that could theoretically kill the price or the cost of, pardon me, the purchases of the real one, even though I don't think so. I want both, and now I've got both. So if you have that need, if you already have a Stream Deck, all you have to do is download it. If you don't have a Stream Deck, get a physical Stream Deck and then appreciate the fact that you'll be able to take it with you in the virtual Stream Deck.
Wow. And Dave shared his Stream Deck collection because, of course, he has all of them.
Yeah, yes. And Jeff, I have to say I disagree. Dave is not out of control. He now controls everything.
He doesn't control. Okay, that's control. Fair.
Exactly. Like
Dave could be now like, wait, you want to launch nukes? Yeah, wait a second. There's a button for that here.
Yeah, there's a button right there.
All within arm's reach.
Exactly.
Yes, that's on Stream Deck
right
7.
Right here with me. I'm just right here. Got it. Lifting my hand, fingertips right here.
Yeah, Dave's nuclear football.
Yes.
You know, I'm on the virtual Stream Deck webpage on Elgato's website. There should just be a big button that says download.
Yes. That would be it. That would be easier.
I don't got it.
Yeah, because when you click how to unlock, it just basically shows you a picture of Stream Decks.
Yes. We'll find it.
Yeah.
You are literally on a company site that means the cat in Spanish.
It's true.
Yeah, well, there it's we go.
When is the last time a cat has ever been easy?
It's not so true.
Right. No.
You know, let's move on from that. You know what is easy? Marty, I think your cool thing is easy.
Oh, I can't move on from that. I've got all those Stream Decks too, and then I discovered paging. That you can kind of page and set up different profiles depending, and of course doing podcasts and doing shows. Mm-hmm. The number of people who show up impact your choices and what you have to set up for a Stream Deck. My original choice was Canbanero, which is basically a JavaScript Kanban that you can put on your desktop. And then I realized there was no way for me to share it between different Macs. So fine on my Mac here, but if I go to work with my laptop, I can't use it. So I'm glad that Jeff put in Trello and reminded me about that. And
I've got your
back. That's gonna spend some money. This one is a cheap cost, $299, and it is Sports Bar. And I saw this in a Reddit feed and went ahead and looked at it. It is basically set up for all football, or as we call it in America, soccer, including the FIFA championships. And so it is a nice little menu bar. Actually, it's a football or soccer ball icon in your menu that you can open up and then you can choose which leagues you want to you want to look. Obviously, right now it's opening as the default for FIFA, but it has Champions League, Europa League, England, Spain, Italy, Germany, France, Turkey. So you can follow those different leagues. But for those of us who are once every 4 years football fans when FIFA comes around, I have personal, political concerns supporting it by actually watching the games. This I can get the scores on, and I can see what the rankings are and all of that. And it's a nice little app with some good options in terms of you can have the group staging or you can do standings, and it'll tell you what the standings are.
Yeah. You know what the added benefit is? You're supporting a company in Europe. They're in Estonia. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
I like that.
Yep. Yep. FIFA, give Marty a medal.
Yes.
Sure. I need a peace prize.
Yes. A peace prize. Yes, I think so.
What did you say? You need a peace pipe?
Ben.
I have one of those, Ben, already.
Yes. Ben, what's your cool thing? What's your drop?
Well, by the power of us numbskulls, this has the power. I went and saw the new Masters of the Universe movie.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting much, but this was a love letter to all things He-Man.
Hmm.
You're going to see references, obviously, to the original Filmation. There are a couple of references, including the Return of Karg from the 87 movie. Yes, it did have a few good moments. The newer cartoons are in there. And, I mean, the new He-Man, Nicholas Galenzi, sorry if I pronounce your name wrong, Nicholas. He's fantastic as both Adam and He-Man. There's a fun little cameo by Dolph Lundgren where he tells him he's in his spot. it's funny. Even if you've never seen any of the Masters of the Universe or She-Ra Universe, this is an absolutely fun movie. Skeletor was the role Jared Leto was born to play because he is the villain. And, it's his own take on it. But you can tell that he is admittedly a huge fan of the Masters of the Universe.
Because
he took the role very seriously. And it's the best role he has ever done. Skeletor is fun. Alison Brie is fantastic as Evil Lyn. Idris Elba, well, yeah.
It's interesting.
I don't have to say his acting.
Yeah.
It even starts really fun with Cringer replacing the MGM lion. This is a movie you can take your Gen X self or your kids if you have any, or your grandkids if you have any, too. It's just a fun movie and hopefully the start of a live-action Masters-verse that people will be enjoying for some time to come. I haven't been a big fan of Amazon lately, but...
Who has?
But this, Travis Knight absolutely knocked this out of the park.
Very cool. Very interesting, cool thing. I think that leaves me. And I have another TV show. It has a Doctor Who connection. So it's an Apple TV Plus, Apple TV show, because Apple renamed that. Not that recently. I just keep saying Apple TV Plus for some reason.
Everybody else.
So does everybody else, yeah. It is Criminal Record. So it came out actually, I think 2 years ago, I want to say. I missed it completely. It stars Peter Capaldi, formerly Doctor Who, formerly Torchwood, formerly done a lot of really cool things. And Kush Jimbo, I think, hopefully I'm not butchering her name, as basically the main actors. It's a crime drama, crime terrorism kind of. Super, super well done. Plays in London, of course, because it has to be British. It's basically Peter Capaldi and Josh Kumbo, the two, Kush Jumbo this way, the two main characters. They're both working for like a criminal investigation unit in a police department, but they're approaching the law from very different perspectives. Like they're, I think both are effective, but both have like very different ways of catching bad people and dealing with the law. Oh, so it's really like a interesting.
British Tango and Cash.
Yeah, kind of like that. And they're most of the time kind of at odds with each other, and are kind of, yeah, as I said, both effective, both kind of getting forced to work together. Whether they want to or not. And yeah, so it's just a really, really cool show. Really enjoyed it. Binged it. It's not that many episodes. I think 8 episodes a season, typical for like a British show. Like somewhere between 6 and 8 is their typical length. So as I said, well, really well done. Very modern. The second season just wrapped. So there's 2 seasons available. Just the last episode came out, I think, last week. So yeah. Go watch that.
Cool. I mean, the odd couple concept has been done 1,000 times.
Yeah. But
for some reason, it works. Always done pretty well.
Yes, it works. Those two really, really work really well together. But there's also a lot of like stuff surrounding it. It's not just the cop stuff, but it's also the personal things that happen and the influence their work has on their personal lives and all of that. So, yeah, it's a good show. And I think with that, we've reached the end of today's very first Taking Out. I want to mention we're on social media as well. We have a Blue Sky account at thetakehangout.com. So just our domain. We have a Mastodon at thetakehangout at takehangout.social. We have a Twitch account, thetakehangout, and we're, of course, streaming this right now live. And also you can watch it if you want on YouTube at Tech Hangout Show, because for some reason the other ones were not available.
And X can suck it.
Yes. That too. Yes, that too. Yeah, so let's go around and let everybody else also know where they can find the awesome people on the panel. Thank you, everybody, for doing this with me and starting this experiment. Stream Deck Neo. Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's start with Chuck. Chuck, thanks. Thanks for being here. And yeah.
Thank you, Patrice. This is a start of something I think we're all going to enjoy. It's going to be a lot of fun. So. I just got to get used to the new format, because it means I have to do homework before the show.
Minor, yes. Yeah. Please bring a story. So, yes.
Yeah, exactly. You can find me at macvoices.com. That's where we have a lot of great stuff going on right now. The Road to Mac Stock series, still more stuff from NAB. There's also a link to the WWDC panel I moderated after the keynote at the MacPaw event, Flip the Script. And yes. On social media, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner.
Very cool. Thank you, Chuck. Marty. Mr. I Have a Million Podcasts, as we already established. Tell us a couple of them. And like,
cut it out. If you're trying to find me, just swing a dead cat and you'll hit something.
You'll get hit with it. I'm sorry.
So, Marty, you're like the Starbucks of podcasting. There's one on every corner.
Yeah, turn around and there's Marty on the other corner. Yeah. I'm not doing that much. I have a lot of stickers.
I'm kidding.
You can find the work that I do at thepodtalk.net, most notably the Neo Notebook, and on Sunday nights, Monday nights, Vision Profiles, a movie, non-Apple podcast called Fade to Chat and 15 Minute Bites and Tech Savvy Professor and Gear Up and Go. But I'm also on Chuck's show on Tuesday night with Mac Voices, Dave's show on Thursday night with In Touch with iOS, and really glad to be here with the Tech Hangout on Friday mornings. So,
very cool. I like that. I have a comment from Chuck, the AMAT network, the All Marty All the Time network.
Maybe I should just so y'all feel better. Maybe I'll just fail.
No, you should not. No. They're good podcasts. We enjoy them.
No, yes, we're rooting for you, Marty. That's why we promote them.
Exactly. Yeah. You have a lot to offer.
We're all counting on you.
Yes, exactly.
And Ben, don't call me Shirley.
Right. Ben, how about you, Mr. I have cats?
Yes, and one of them is literally trying to knock down my second monitor right now.
Exactly, I saw that.
Yeah. You can find me at Ben Rathick on social media. You can also find me, here.
Here. Good. That's a good place to find you.
Yes, right now. Right here, right now.
Yeah. And Dave, hope your construction is going well.
It is. So far, we got a little ways to go. At least another seven, 8 weeks.
Good. Good. That means you have another 7-8 weeks time to spend with us. Thanks for being here. And yeah,
always.
Tell us where we can find you.
You could find me at intouchwithios.com, which is right there. And you can do a YouTube channel at youtube.com/intouchwithios. Various podcasts, including Neo Notebook on Sundays, Vision Profiles Mondays, Tuesdays Mac Voices Live, and our show on Thursdays, In Touch with iOS. And you can find me here now on the Tech Hangout and Dave G65 on both Blue Sky and Mastodon.
Very cool. Thank you. And Jeff, what about you?
Well, Patrice, you can find me on my blogs, jeffgamet.com and freshbrewedtales.com. And then on the various social medias as jgamet, active mostly right now on Mastodon, PixelFed, and Blue Sky. And then the shows, Tuesdays on Chuck's Mac Voices Live, Thursdays on Dave's In Touch with iOS, The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin, and my mug, I grabbed the Retro Rewatch mug today. Look at that. Look at that Context Machine representing t-shirts and mugs. You people rock. Yeah, so Patrice and I do Retro Rewatch. Well,
you bought it.
Yeah. Go to the website, contextmachine.io. You can buy all kinds of stuff. Anyhow, yeah, and now here we are in the tech hangout. So yeah,
you can buy all kinds of stuff like ICBMs, for example.
Right, hook them up to your Stream Decks.
Exactly.
Yes.
Good. Me with you here on this very podcast, and also with Jeff, as he mentioned, on Retro Rewatch, and just everything I'm doing, social media links, podcasts, projects, all of that. On my website, thepatrice.com is to get you. That will get you there. Yeah, and thank you so much for listening. And hopefully, we'll see each other next week for another Tech Hangout. And we'll see what happens until then. See you then.
Peace out.